After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. Androgen personifies joy and the idea that life is a gift. Prepare to hang on his every word as you learn more about his magical career over the last 26 years in fashion, or just get lost in the warmth of his laughter. Androgen, my old friend, my old young friend, I am so excited to have you on the podcast and so excited to have you back in the store. What a treat.
I know, it's so wonderful. We're like reunited. You know, we've been through a lot, both of us, but I think it's all good.
Did we meet through Elizabeth Vondergoltz? Did she introduce us?
Yes, I think you went, if I recall correctly, you went to college with Elizabeth. You went to school with Elizabeth.
Yes, I did. High school.
Yeah, and Elizabeth has always been like a great friend of mine. She's like my little sister. And obviously you came in and, you know, we're part of the family. And I remember seeing you. No. The last time I saw you, I met you in my office. But the other time was actually at a wedding.
Oh, yes, exactly. You're right.
Yeah.
And yeah. I almost think, Andrew, the first time we met was at dinner. I feel like that's the first time I met you, but I loved you instantly. And you've also been to Charlotte. You've been into my house. We had a party at the house.
God, it was amazing. I love Charlotte. I was staying at the mansion, remember?
Yes, at the Duke Mansion. Yeah. Well, Charlotte loves you. They need to have you come back soon.
And you did such a beautiful dinner for me. I always remember. It was so beautiful. And thank you. Thank you so much.
We'll come back soon.
I will.
Andrew, remind me, I think you're from Singapore. Is that correct?
I was born in Singapore, and I am three-quarter Chinese and one-quarter Japanese. And I went to fashion school in St. Martin's in London. And then I did a year of exchange program while I was at St. Martin's at Parsons, New York. And I completed my fashion studies by doing an MA in Milan with Domus Academy.
Well, I want to hear a little bit more about Singapore. I mean, did your parents grow up there? What's it like? I mean, what was it like growing up there? And what was your first memory of fashion?
Well, it's interesting. My father was actually originally from China. And my mother is the one who's one half Japanese and half Chinese. My mother was born in Singapore. My dad migrated from China. It's interesting because my father was a merchant. Well, he passed away many years ago. He was a merchant and he was traveling a lot in Southeast Asia. And my very first memory was he would bring back the most amazing batiks from hand-painted, hand-dyed batiks from Indonesia.
Huh.
And then Japanese kimono silk and obi. Chinese silk, you know, all sort of fancy, amazing things from Southeast Asia to my mom. And my mom would bring all these fabrics to like her tailor and have them made into that Chinese costume, the Chinese dress called Qi Pao, you know, that dress that was worn repeatedly by Maggie Cheung in The Mood of Love, you know, that traditional Chinese dress. She'll use the batik to transform them into a qi pao, and she'll make little tailleurs in it. She'll make little sheath dresses in it. And it was so interesting. For me, it's very magical seeing all these two-dimensional fabric being transformed into something which is completely three-dimensional.
Mm.
So, and also my mother was very elegant, and she wore a lot of Chanel and Saint Laurent, and also Valentino and Jean Muir. And I always remember that when I was a kid in the 70s, we went to New York together, and she was shopping with that store called Martha.
Oh, yeah.
And Martha was carrying, like, Bill Glass, Jeffrey Bean. It was the first time I saw American designers. So as a kid, I was fascinated by the whole, like, fashion and all that. So It's always in the back of my mind that, you know, I can do something with those beautiful frocks and might want to design them. I was always toying with the idea while growing up. I love art as well. And I always say to myself that, you know, it's either art or fashion. And I've decided finally to design, to design clothing, to make it as my profession, as my work, and then make collecting as my hobby. And I think that's a perfect combination.
And you're really good at both of them.
I'm actually a bulimic buyer, they do call me. I'm obsessed with buying art and everything. And it's really crazy.
And do you remember going with your mom to the tailor, and were you opinionated? I mean, do you remember saying, I think it should be shorter or move the buttons or any of that? Or just were just observing?
I was observing. I was kind of shy in the beginning, but, you know, growing up, and then, you know, and I started saying that it's true. Like what you said, I was like, Mom, you might want to turn that green silk into a tailleur rather than making the chausson, because I believe that actually looks better. And I think you can trim it tone on tone, you know, and make it less fussy, and you can wear that. And it all comes very softly and swiftly. And I remember those were my very early fashion experience. And in Singapore, there were like about two or three at a time. Only two or three. It's a small country. There were two or three specialty stores. And one of them being called Men and His Women. And it was my early fashion experience. I saved a lot of money to buy my first Kenzo Zua pants, my first B-Bloss. Remember the label called
B-Bloss? Yes, of course.
Incredible. I bought my first B-Bloss tuxedos, even though I wore it once. And I bought my first Gianni Versace sweater. You know, I saved up all this money and bought them, you know, on markdown. And I was very happy.
Yeah.
And I was 12 or 13 years old. And those were my early, early memories.
And Andrew, you went to boarding school early.
Yes. My parents sent me to boarding school when I was 10 and a half. My brother left when he was 9.
Wow. And where in the UK, or where did you
go? In the UK, yes. In the UK, Stratford-upon-Avon.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, that must have been a culture shock or just a shock altogether.
Yeah, I know. It was a very pleasant surprise, because coming from an exotic, Singapore is hot and humid all year round.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating, because you wear something nice. I was wearing to wear a jacket. My dream was to wear cashmere when I was a kid. And it was never the case. So when I arrived in England, it was so cold. We could put on coats and hats and boots and everything. It was a swinging, you know, 70s. I was so happy to experience winter. It was such an experience for me. A boy from a tropical country, honey. You know, it's quite an experience.
My mother's from Florida, and all of my cousins are from Florida, and their winter wardrobe for traveling is so much bigger than their summer wardrobe. They love cashmere. It's so funny. From boarding school, where did you go to university, and when did you start to get the idea that maybe you wanted to do fashion?
I went from boarding school. After that, I went back to Singapore to serve my military service.
Oh, wow.
For 2.5 years. Yes, I do know how to use a rifle.
But actually, it's funny you say that, because I really am seeing some, I didn't know that you did that, and I can see that in the clothes a little bit, some epaulettes and things like that, and buttons. I can see a little bit of that. Wow, that must, talk about, again, culture shock. That must have been crazy to go back to that.
Yes. That was quite, but you know, that two years of military service, actually, I used that time to figure out exactly what I wanted to do, because I was preparing myself to a dossier of the drawings and all that to present it to St. Martin's, to try to enter St. Martin's. And at the same time, I was in my mind, in the back of my mind, I was trying to apply for that a course at the V&A in Victoria and Albert Museum in London to become either a curator for the museum or working for an auction house. And I finally decided that, you know what, I really love fashion, and this is exactly what I want to do. And so I made up my mind, and I went to for an interview at St. Martin's. They took me in, and I went in as a student in the 80s. It's really interesting. And I arrived in London, in 1986, 87. And so London was so different from London today. I mean, Camden Town and, you know, all the vintage clothings, and all of us were like, you know, all the fashion show was so excited by everything. It was quite an experience. And I think London really taught me how to dream. And then New York taught me, you know, that fashion is a business. And at the end, Milan taught me a lot about the industry, about productions, about, you know, that's what they're very good at. And I must say that I've been extremely lucky to be able to attend all the different colleges in three major fashion cities. And I think that really enriches my vision and the way I work.
You know, I always think going away from home makes you appreciate and understand home more. And so being away in these very different places, New York and Milan, London, how did it make you think about Asia? And did Asia show up again in your work?
And I think despite the fact that I'm based in Paris and I'm considered as a Singaporean designer based in Paris, my heart and my roots is pure Asian, and I think I've never left home. My heart has always been that. And it seems to come back all the time in my work, because I think I'm obsessed with the perfection and the execution of the design of my own design and the details. And there are lots of things that I spend a lot of time designing with my team. It's really quite Asian, because it's a quest, constant quest for beauty and perfection that really drives me. And that's really my motto. I think I have a fairly strong signature, but I sort of, and it's this quest of beauty, but obviously I evolve a lot. And that's why fashion is so interesting. I've chosen that as my profession, because I feel it's extremely challenging, because you have to reinvent yourself all the time, even more so now, because people get blasé quite fast, and you need to get them interested in your work and to, you know what's the new thing, what's the latest, even more so with social media. And so I feel that is really, it's very challenging, but again, that's the wonderful part of this work, because we are constantly reinventing something new around the corner all the time, and it keeps me going. And so I really think that I've chosen the right thing for my life, and I love what I'm doing.
I love that. There's a quote that I saw from you: everything is about timing. Never do anything unless you're ready for it.
That basically, I mean, when I was young, in 1997, I learned a lesson, because as a young struggling designer, the House of Balmain came and proposed a very important position to me, being the creative director of the ready-to-wear, designing the ready-to-wear for the House of Balmain, alongside with Mr. Oscar de la Renta doing the haute couture at the time. And obviously, without even thinking about it, I said, oh my God, yes, I'm all for it. And I'm like, wow, I'm here. I want to do it. And it turns out to be a big flop, because I think I was not ready for it. And that was a very, very important lesson. It taught me that timing is so important. Never do something whenever you're not ready for it. But you know what? I came up fine. It was just like having a, you know, some actor who had a really bad film, and you go and do another good film, and it's fine, it's all good.
And when you look back on the collection, was it a flop? It was a flop commercially or editorially, or what? Because when you look back at the clothes, do you still think that they were a failure?
No, I think the clothings were good. Mm. And in fact, looking back, there were some great ideas in it. It was actually the show. And that's why it's interesting that sometimes a lot of the press and buyers judge from a show, and the show went wrong. It was just went wrong. We had a stylist who was very good, but was not very experienced. Just like me, it was one of the very first few big shows that she did. And the lighting went wrong. The casting wasn't great. And I always remember, but people could remember, like even until now, Susie Mankins was telling me, all I could remember from that show was some hair piece from the model fell down and someone picked on it. It became a hairball. And it was, at that time, everybody was there. I mean, you know, everybody from American Vogue. I mean, Anna was there, Andrea was there, even Isabella Blow was still alive then, and she was there, and all the silly makeup was there. And everybody gave it a thumb down, and the show went really, really wrong, and everything just went wrong. So, you know, I mean, you know, it's looking back, it doesn't matter. It's just a stat. And in life, there's so many moments. It was just one of the moments. But and I came up fine. I'm very happy.
And do you remember after the show, did they have sort of did they have a recap, and did everybody get in trouble and they say this was wrong? Or is it from your own self-reflection that you remembered?
It was quite shocking, especially for a young person. You sort of think that, oh my God, it's the end of my career. And then they obviously wrote a really big check. I took the check, and it was really great for a small struggling designer and for me at the time. And a season after, I was picked up by Colette.
Oh, wow.
And Colette picked me up from the very beginning. So that's why I always say that I owe it to them, my success, because they saw something. They picked me up, they picked up the line, and they allowed me to do a show in the store 8 months after. And that was quite something. And to support me even further, they did 3 consecutive Fashion Week windows at Colette. And at the time, it was really incredible. I mean, it was, you know, a very important store. And it brought that whole new idea about lifestyle and, you know, and it's a new generation of store. And I think a lot of us owe our industry to them today. And it's interesting because it's another point of view. It's a new way of seeing things.
Absolutely.
And they very kindly promoted me, and without any, you know, it was so, so good. And it's a very special store. And then, you know, and then you pick me up, one of the most special store in the U.S. And, you know. So amazing.
Oh, well, let's take a couple steps back. I want to hear, after Central St. Martin's, how did you start? Did you have a job right out of college?
No, in fact, after St. Martin's, I went to do an MA in Domus Academy.
Oh.
So I did my MA before I graduated. And then I was offered 2 jobs. I went for interviews in different houses. I was coming to Paris and I was going to Rome and all that. So I was offered a job being the personal assistant of Mr. Valentino.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a big, it's a big deal. And I was remember waiting to see Mr. Valentino. I mean, he was going from one room to another and he had a boy wearing white gloves opening the doors for him. And it was just incredible. Like they call it the emperor. Emperor.
Exactly.
The emperor of Rome. Yes. And then I was also offered a job by Mr. Emmanuel Ungaro from Paris.
He was so special.
That was a very special moment. So I said, you know what, Rome I love, but it is a smaller city. And Paris is so exciting. And I've always wanted to live in Paris because I saw Paris the first time when I came with the boarding school on a school trip. And I said, the city of light is so gorgeous. It's consistently beautiful, undestroyed, untouched by the Second World War. It's just incredible. I want to live here. And so I said, you know what? Instead of going to Rome, I'm going to move to Paris. So I accepted the job at Ungaro and moved here and never regretted it. You know, I'm still enjoying Paris. I love Paris.
Tell me what you learned at Ungaro. He was such a fabulous, incredible designer and an amazing man, really.
Being anal. He was the most, like most, he's such a perfectionist.
Yeah.
I mean, there were 4 of us being his assistants. And there was Veronique, there was Sabrina, and Ryotsu, another Japanese boy. And we'll take turn to assist him because Monsieur would always work on his toile, and we'll be holding needles and helping him to pin the toile, to work on the toile for the couture and also for the ready-to-wear. He works in a very old-fashioned way, just like Balenciaga. He worked with Balenciaga before. And so he did exactly the same thing, such precision. in the seamings, in the placement, in the straight grains, going with the bias and the bias usage of bias. I learned a lot of secrets about cloth making with him. Yeah. And I think that is absolutely precious, because you don't really realize it. You sort of hated it because you wanted to design like fun things and you want to go in and do block things. But you know, it's like going back to school, and those are the things that you don't really learn while you're in a fashion college, because these are reality. And these are things that are truly luxurious to be able to sit there and work on a garment for such a long time just for that one dress. Sometimes you drape for like 2 or 3 days only on one toile for one specific gown. Could you imagine? I mean, you know, talk about slow fashion, and that is a great example of slow fashion.
Well, and I think one thing that you definitely share with Unguru is a joy and a real love of women that's very, yes, very clear in your work. There's such a joy to what you do and what he did.
I want to make a woman beautiful, and that's important. It sounds so old-fashioned, but
it's actually not. I mean, it's pretty much. Yeah, exactly. It's crazy that you have to
talk. To say, I want to be ugly. Please make me ugly.
I've also really admired, Andrew, your perseverance and as you've faced health issues in the last few years. Because we both had our health scares. Tell me about that period in your life and how you came out of it differently.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was quite something. In fact, I had two health scares in my life. In 2015, I had a huge open heart surgery because one of the valves of my heart was infected by bacteria, and I have to, you know, it's a mechanical valve. And because of that, I have to take blood thinner for the rest of my life. And because of the blood thinner, I had a stroke.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I had a stroke last year, and half of my body was actually paralyzed. And it took me about 6 months to come back and to be able to move my hands. And now I can design, I can draw. And I think the joy of, in fact, on my Instagram, I posted once, I say, it's a joy to be able to stand up and, you know, use a pair of scissors to cut flowers and arrange flowers and start drawing again. It's such joy, it's such simple. Something like that. You never really understand the joy of it until you've lost that privilege.
Right.
And being able to walk around and to draw and to eat my wonton soup with the chopsticks, it is a joy.
Yeah. It sounds like your stroke and the recovery, oddly, didn't slow you down at all. Are there things that, were there adjustments that you made in your life or your lifestyle that things that you changed, or did Eric force you to slow down?
I'm a foodie, and in fact, a lot of people like Elizabeth would call me the panda. And a lot of me the panda because I love food, and I spend most of the time fantasizing about creating a new dish, going to the new restaurants. And whenever I'm like trying to adjust my weight by eating less, then I'll be watching a lot of cooking programs on YouTube, which is a real torture for me. And, you know, the stroke has given me a new perspective in my life, because I have to really watch what I'm eating, and I have to watch my weight. And I see my doctor once a month. It's quite boring. He's a very strict person. It's like going to see the headmaster of your school, and you weigh me. And I always say, oh, shit, must you weigh me all the time whenever I see you? And also I walk strange because, you know, even though I can walk freely and I can walk well now, but I still have a little cripply thing when I don't pay attention. So there are little things like that which makes it less convenient when I do something. But in a way, you know, it strengthened me. It gives me so much more strength. And, you know, I'm not being brought down by that situation. I just feel that, you know, it's a gift that I'm still alive, you know, after, I'm sure it's the same thing for you, Laura,
yeah, yeah.
That, you know, staying alive is really a gift, and life is so wonderful, even though that is, life is very short, but You know, I just feel very happy being alive. And the other day, it was so sunny in Paris. We were walking in this beautiful garden called Jardin Albertin. Mm. And they have a Japanese garden, and all the camellias are on full bloom with the cherry blossoms. And, you know, it was such joy. The sun was shining. And, you know, whenever you're down, you know, when you go out and see this, and you say, you know, after all, life is not that bad. We are all still alive. And we're not like those poor Ukrainians suffering in a country during the war. We're all so lucky.
Yeah.
So in a way, life is a blessing. It is a blessing that we're still alive.
Were you ever afraid that you didn't want to come back to it? I mean, I definitely had a period when I was sick that I thought, well, maybe I don't want to do this anymore. You know, maybe I don't have the heart for it or the stamina to do it, because fashion is a real fight. You know, it's not an easy job.
It's a bitch, you want to say.
It's
a bitch, but we love it. We love it, Laura. We love it so much.
We love it so much. Yeah, I mean, I have
to
say,
like a really difficult lover. He said, you know, I hate you, but then I can't leave you because I love you so much. And that's really the love-hate relationship, Laura.
It's so true.
And I think both of us is actually, we're like that, you know. And I think being able to bring something beautiful to this world, it's one of the most important thing. And I think I can't live without beauty myself. I can't imagine myself living without beauty. And it's such joy doing things that we're doing. No, Taffy want to continue, and I'm very happy doing it.
It's a rare career that you bring such joy to your clients. You know, I always say that to my masseuse. I'm like, this must be a great job because everybody's so happy when they see you, and you make them feel so much better. But you are the same way with your clothes. And I also think one of the things that's interesting about you and has always been one of your biggest strengths is that you spend a lot of time doing things for private clients. And so you spend a lot of time with your clients, which I do think is unusual and has given you such a different perspective, I think, than most people that we work with.
And I think it's, in fact, and enjoy talking to people. And I also enjoy sharing ideas with people. And the biggest joy of this job is I'll be able to meet all my clients, and sometimes they're my friends, and to be able to understand what they need and what they like and what they don't like, and to be able to design for them and make them beautiful. And also I really enjoy, you know, contact with people. That's why the past 2 years with the pandemic is really difficult, because, you know, you're sort of like being very isolated. Everything is done on Zoom. Mm-hmm. Everything is done on, you know, we had Zoom cocktails, Zoom lunch, Zoom dinner. Everybody has their own food in front of you, eating on your own. And I just miss, you know, having contact with people. And most probably it's also like the old ways, because Bill Blass and Mr. Oscar de la Renta, Mr. Valentino, know all the customers.
Yeah.
And I remember that short period of time when I was with Oscar de la Renta. Mrs. de la Renta would say, oh, I know that Daniel Steele will love this. I think that Lynn White will like that. And I think that, you know, Nan Kempner will be going for this. And, you know, it's the same thing, because when I design a collection, I would say, oh, that is for New York, and that is for Charlotte, and this is for Texas. And I think the love colors in the West Coast and also the South, and we're doing more colors. And then this is for Riyadh, this is for Dubai. So I have an idea, and it's not a bad thing. A lot of people think that you think that way, it's a bad thing. And I said, no, because it's when you design something, you want it to be worn by real people.
Yeah.
It's not something to be only shot by a magazine and no one wants it. And what's the whole point? I mean, you might as well do art. And, you know, like what Mr. Lagerfeld used to say, fashion is just fashion, it's not architecture, not fine art. And it is a form of art, but then it is something that makes you very happy. You go out, and that's the whole joy of it, you know?
It's funny, Lisa, my friend Lisa, who is a longtime client of yours, just bought a gown this week and she was trying it on and she said, oh my gosh, I've missed Andrew so much. And she said, how does he just know how to do, you know, the cuff like this and the belt like this and all this? And I just said, I think because he knows his clients, like he knows what women want. And she was so relieved. And anyway, it was such a joy to watch her and to watch how happy she was trying on your clothes.
Did she come to the gym?
Yes, yes. Yes, exactly.
Very chic lady. Very chic.
Still very chic. And another great asset that I think you have is Eric, who has been with you for a long time. And tell me about that relationship and how he balances your creativity and what that's been like.
27 years. 27 wow. long years. Yeah, I know. I would say that he's my director. So he's the one who's tightening up the tab and I'm the spender. And which I'm sure it's the same, you know, always the same situation, the couple. He is a very strong person. He encourages me all the time. And he will tell me, I think he's the only person who will tell me, you shouldn't be doing this because this is ugly. This is a mistake. And I would fight back and say, no, it's not true. And most probably 3 days after, I say, you know what, Eric? I think you're right. And I'm very impulsive. I'm always full of my own. I'm filled up with my instincts. And you know how creative people are. We have to have a lot of faith in ourselves.
Yes.
We never see anything faulty of ourselves. And he's the one who will be able to come and say, look, listen, don't do this. Because I think, you know, this is not good. This is not. So he's very, very good in that. And I must say that we have a perfect relationship because we work together, we live together. And but then we managed to have an extremely balanced and very loving relationship. And until now, we love each other even more and more.
Yeah. And especially through struggles. And I do know you also have the same taste in collecting.
Thank God.
Which I'm the same with my husband, and I think it's been one of the most rewarding parts of our relationship is collecting together and to talk about what we, you know, what pieces we like and why and what we don't like, and sometimes we agree and a lot of times we don't. But it's been a really important part.
It makes shopping easier.
Andrew, you're coming on 25 years of your business.
Yes.
How more. Amazing.
Yeah. That's in 1996. And so it should be 2022. No, more, 26 years. And in fact, I have a scoop for you, and you might be the first person, one of the first people who would know, is that the Singapore Civilization Museum in Singapore and the Ministry of Culture are honoring me next year in Singapore.
Oh, wow.
By big retrospective.
I mean, that must feel amazing. That was part of what I was going to ask is, what are you most proud of in these 26 years?
Well, that makes me very proud of many, many moments, but that is really proud because there's nothing better than being your work being recognized by your own country, your own people. And so alongside with the exhibition, obviously there will be a catalog, and then there will also be a biography, and then most probably a film.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Andrew, why do you think that your designs have stood the test of time?
You know what, Laura? I've always wanted, I think, for example, this season, you have all the corals. And in fact, you had a coral moment before, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm back in it.
This is very much my work because the first time I did coral was 2005. And then after that, I did it again in 2013. My motto has always been like beauty. And my answer to sustainability before it became really such an important issue in the fashion world is to create something that people could keep it for a long time and even bring it out from your... take it out from a wardrobe after, you know, many years and still be able to wear it and eventually hand it down to your children, your daughters, because I don't do menswear and it goes for, you know, hand it down to your daughters. And I think that that is extremely important because I do not want to do trends. And obviously my clothes are fashionable when they just, but I just want to do very beautiful things. I always remember I was in Chicago for a luncheon and a woman came up to me wearing one of my coats, a Hoffman coat. So it was actually a black coat with white satin applique on top of it. I wonder if you remember that coat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's one of a very signature coat and inspired by the Viennese Secession, Hoffman. And the woman said, you know, my house was on fire, but I managed to save three things, one of them being your coat. And I thought that was the most emotional moment for me because I said, wow. But then she wore it to the luncheon to come and meet me. And that coat must be like about 18 years old or something like that, or more, even like 20 years old.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
How do you think the fashion industry has changed in the last 26 years?
I think change in such a way that everything has gone, how should I say it, is speed up. And because I think that more and more, you know, because of social media, I think social media really changed our life. You know, you go to a store, it's a very precious experience now. I feel that going to a store to shop and shopping online are totally two different experiences because shopping online, I find it always, I personally, whenever I do that, it's really difficult. I say you literally need an assistant to unpack your clothes and then you try it on. And then if you don't like it, you need to unpack, to pack it back and then send it back. It is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah.
It's a lot of work. Whereas you go into a physical store and I think, you know, you're being served, you go into your beautiful store, someone will give you advice, you can try it on, you'll take your time to try it, and it's such an experience. And I just think that even more so after the pandemic, a physical store, and people like keep on saying, oh, traditional retail doesn't work anymore. I said, no, even more so after the pandemic, because you want that experience. You've been sitting at home, you've been shopping online for 2 years. You can have olive oil, you can have peanut butter, you can have
vitamins
delivered to you, and even flowers being left in front of you. But you want to go on and meet people. It's such an experience. It's so wonderful.
Yes.
It is just wonderful. So I just think that, you know, so all this hoo-ha's about online, obviously online has their own audience and, you know, it's another matter. But I think more and more people would like to go back and to talk to the sales associate, go into a beautiful space and choose slowly because this is what you want after such a long while.
And having them do the work for you. I think it's funny, we have on our contracts to work, our sales team, part one of the requirements to work there is that you're able to lift, I don't know what it is, 15 pounds or something like that. There's some actual like part of the contract. And I always thought it was really weird. And now since I was sick, I never realized how physical the job is, the amount of things that we lift and, you know, taking these gowns to people's cars or their houses. I mean, it's a really, really physical job. And wouldn't you rather somebody help you do that than having you do it yourself, for sure?
Absolutely. No, it's true. And, you know, packing, unpacking, sending it back is so much work.
And it's also not sustainable. I mean, it's so wasteful.
No,
but
it's not. So not sustainable. And, you know, you want to support, you know, a store which is in your city that you could, you know, within in the vicinity, or you can drive for a short distance or whatever. But, you know, having things like flown in and then flying back and going there, it's so not sustainable, really.
I have always really admired this about you. You've always been such a positive person. And I think even it was funny, I asked you in the middle of the pandemic, how has selling via Zoom been for you? And you said, oh, it's been fabulous. It's been wonderful. We've really enjoyed it. And I don't know that you really meant it, but I believed it when you said it, because you said it's been great because we have photos of every single piece. You can see every single angle of it. It's even better than in person. And I just love how positive you are and in the face of all sorts of challenges. Where does that come from? Is that something you've had your whole life?
I don't know. I think I'm Aquarius. I'm always on the upside. I could be, you know, sometimes could be really negative and I'd be like really upset. I don't know the experience of depression. I've never experienced depression, which is an odd thing. I'm always like happy. And then, and I think it is actually a very positive nature. And I'm an Aquarius and I always believe that, you know, if God gives me lemon, I'll make the best lemonade. I think that is everything. No, I would like to think of it as a quality, you know, and it's also essential because fashion is hard.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
And especially when you're talking about during the pandemic, I mean, we have to sell collections, and we still sell collections through Zoom, and a lot of people get used to it, and you know, it's a different matter because it's a wholesale business, so you know, we do that with no choice. But we need to stay positive and get out of it. And then when we can start traveling again, then we do all happy things. So I always keep myself extremely positive. And I you know what? I always have this to create something to look forward to. It could be a meal. It could be a piece of sculpture. I would say, oh, after this, I'll buy that sculpture. Oh, I had this meal in this restaurant, and that keeps me going. And I think, you know, I keep on creating things like that for me to look forward to something in life. And I think that's very, very important.
What do you hope for the next 25 years of your business?
Oh my God, that's a big question, Laura.
I saved the best for last.
Well, I think I'll keep on working and keep on creating. And it's a funny thing because a lot of people think, from the very beginning, I always want to keep my company quite small. And it's accidentally that we've grown to the size we're in right now. And we're in a lot of stores. We're doing quite a lot of business all over the world. And in fact, I'm running my company, I'm dare to say that, like my own country, Singapore. We do not pretend to be the biggest, but we want to be one of the very best and to be extremely efficient and successful. So it's with that attitude that I'm going to continue my company and my line and my house for the next 25 years. To be really precious and not grow too big and bring beautiful things to all people who loves it.
During every podcast, we ask our guests what they wore to the prom. And I don't know that you would have had a prom in boarding school in England. Did you have, or did you have a formal dance?
We didn't have a prom, no. We don't really have proms in there.
Well, did they have formals?
We're reunions, but we don't really have a graduation. All the boys has to wear the little three-piece suit and a tie, and you're looking proper and everything. Love to wear dress or something.
Well, what was your uniform like? What did you wear at boarding school?
Well, until 14, we were wearing shorts, which is really embarrassing. Nice.
And cold.
15. And I think after that, for A-levels, you could start wearing slacks. So that was the rules. And jackets, and during summertime or when you're wearing, we're playing sports, you normally wear your shirts and you tie your tie around your waist and you wear your little slacks. Yeah, it's very proper.
And was the blazer like a gray flannel?
Yes, with a little,
I love
little
it.
Emblem there. Yeah.
I love it.
It was blue.
Aww. Yeah. Well, Andrew, what a treat to be able to talk to you, and looking forward to seeing you this summer, and we'd love to have you come to Charlotte soon, maybe in the fall.
I love I miss my grits and shrimps. Remember
your fried chicken, biscuits, grits, shrimp and grits, all of the things. Yeah, we'd love that.
I miss coming to the South. Well, I look forward to seeing you,
Laura,
and let's get together very soon.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.